This is a Roundtable Rewind on Jocks 94.5.
Everyone was raving last night on the Top Gun 2 trailer, which, by the way, when Rockstar or LT told me there was going to be a Top Gun 2, I wasn't sure it really was going to happen, but apparently it is out in the summer of 2020. And I just said, hey, did you guys see the trailer last night? How good was it? And then all of a sudden I get negative from Rockstar, negative from Brown, and LT says, what were you guys expecting? So too much cheese for you,
well,
Rockstar?
Yeah. But not, I understand the first one was cheesy. I understand that, but this one is just a callback to the first one. It's just all like the same imagery and the same him riding the runway on his motorcycle. You remember that from? You remember this one from the first movie? Him unwrapping, taking the cover off.
Yeah, taking the cover off the motorcycle.
Exactly what I expected.
I go and see Spider-Man. They have to flashback and tell me that the X-Men guy is dead. They're doing flashbacks there. You have to bring a new generation to the next movie, don't you?
I don't think he's an X-Man, but...
Well, you know what I'm talking about.
My favorite part of it is right in the middle of it, you know, the old theme, the... Yeah, they do that real slow now. Oh, so cheesy.
I can't believe you guys were expecting something different. Well, this is exactly the way I thought they would do it. I just can't believe they did that app on Ed Harris. Aging out
to make him look that old.
They,
rough,
they did that, and Val Kilmer must look so rough. They didn't even show him in the trailer that I saw,
and he's in it, right?
Yeah, one of the main guys again.
But I'm like Rockstar. It's not that I didn't expect it to be cheesy, but it's just like, hey, let's just. It's a redo.
No, I disagree. I think
how do you disagree?
It's what they're doing in a 90-second trailer is I think they're showing a lot of those moments to hook back the generation that saw it before.
100%.
There's also a new, what looks to be a new mission. I mean, it's the same old Maverick or whatever.
Well, he's flying through snow-covered mountains.
I think what you saw in that trailer are the only flashback or kind of similar scenes that you'll see throughout
that
movie.
So is Goose not playing the piano in that trailer?
Yeah, it's like a flashback of Goose playing the piano.
Yeah, are we bringing him back to life? What's going on there?
No, he's not coming back to life.
How do you know?
Because it's a memory.
The motorcycle came back to life.
It's the reason why if you go see the trailer, it's the reason why he's just a captain and not a two-star admiral.
Yeah, I think what happens here...
Because he killed Goose.
I'm just based on what I saw in the trailer, something is going to happen to trigger the memory of Goose. He's going to be riding the motorcycle, have the flashbacks of Goose playing the piano, but the only reason he is getting the motorcycle back out is because of the memories of Goose.
Wait a minute. You blame Maverick for Goose's death?
You don't?
No. It was just a malfunction. I mean, they were...
malfunction.
No. But it was Maverick pushing the limits. I mean, he was...
Yeah,
but
they were in combat. Or at least...
No.
Simulated combat. Yeah. But you gotta treat it like it's real combat.
No, but he was showing out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think most people thought it was his responsibility.
Didn't he get caught in the wash of the other plane?
He got caught doing something, but he wasn't supposed to be doing what he was doing the way I remember the movie.
Ooh, I don't remember it that way.
He got cleared of it.
Yeah, he got cleared.
But he had to go into a panel.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, you're going to investigate that stuff.
But it was a gray area.
Well, let's do a poll question. Do people blame Maverick for Goose's death?
I mean,
because I don't.
I think if it's more of a conservative pilot, I think Goose is still alive.
Well, that's right.
But I don't have a sequel.
I don't necessarily need my pilots to be conservative.
Probably not the same film.
Well, you're not Goose's family.
Well, I'm not.
I'm sure
Meg Ryan's very upset.
I think she landed on her feet. I bet she got a nice settlement from the government. I bet she was remarried within 18 months. I don't know if it'll say that, if that'll be part of the storyline.
I bet at some point.
You think he's living with Kelly McGillis right now?
No. I'm going to say no.
You don't think so?
I'm going to say no.
No.
Did you say Meg Ryan or Maverick?
No, Maverick is Maverick, too.
Yeah. Good point.
You coming home tonight? No, we got to fly again.
She actually had the app 5 years ago.
Yeah. She was ahead of the game.
Yeah. As Chris points out, Miles Teller plays Goose's son. Maverick is an instructor as they move into this one. He's teaching other kids to fly, including Goose's son, who shows up in the classroom, and he's like, that's Goose's son.
That was very dramatic.
Miles Teller, good actor.
I guess trailer number one was just all nostalgia, because none of these people were... You would think they'd featured Iceman on the first trailer, if it's going to be all nostalgia.
I bet he can't do the volleyball scene. I mean, he's had some health issues, obviously.
The volleyball scene's going to be in there.
Yeah, there was a volleyball scene.
With females, though, this time, too.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. Roger says...
Are they going to be paid the same? That's what I want to know.
Only if they win. Roger writes in, no way Maverick was responsible for the death of Goose. He flew through jet wash, putting the plane into a flat spin. Don't you know that movie made us all experts on fighter jets?
Oh, no doubt. Okay. Yeah, well,
sounds like he knows what he's talking about.
He nailed it.
I'll defer to him.
Curtis, one of our great listeners. Maverick flew through the jet wash, causing the malfunction. Well, listen, I'm asking you, if you fly through the jet wash, is that not your fault? That's your fault, right?
I'll tell you this.
I don't know.
I've never flown a plane before, but I'm going to avoid the jet wash after Top Gun.
You can't always see it, though. Jet wash is invisible.
Yeah.
Chris, I mean, look at Chris. He makes a great point here. It wasn't Maverick's fault. The other pilot didn't have the shot on Viper, but he refused to concede. Maverick was the wingman. He tried to take the shot anyway.
A goose should have ducked.
Johnson.
Very unfortunate.
I don't think ducking would have helped him.
UAB's media day wrapped up yesterday. Conference USA, the Blazers, they're of course picked by the folks who cover Conference USA to finish fourth in their division after winning the conference championship last year. Let's get back to SEC media days. Gus Malzahn had a chance to sit down with our buddies on three-man front. Last year, new Malzahn era lows in just the SEC games. They averaged 328 yards a game, 5.1 yard a play. Those were lows for Gus Malzahn teams and almost the lowest in point production, 22.3 points a game, 22.1 in 2015. So virtually the same was the low point during the Gus Malzahn era. Now Gus is calling plays, and here's what he told the guys on three-man front.
Honestly, I'm back to being me. I mean, that's what got me here. That's who I am at my core. Just a different kind of excitement, and being out there and being in control of the offense and, putting the pieces of the puzzle and everything that goes with it.
A couple of times ago when Gus Malzahn was on with us, he said the same thing when we asked him about going back to calling plays. It's what he's comfortable in doing. The question becomes, is what we saw against a Purdue team that beat Ohio State last year what we're going to get? Is that a throwaway because it's a different quarterback, or is it just whatever we get out of the offensive line is what we're going to get out of Auburn?
Maybe somewhere in between. That Purdue game was just a strange game. I think we were all kind of shocked by the outcome there, and 586 total yards and 63 points. And, I don't know if Purdue was up for two consecutive nights. That just, everything came together for Auburn that day. And again, that was a totally different quarterback, and the offensive line should be much improved. I mean, you look at it overall, almost 31 points per game last year for this team. And we talked about Kevin Steele in his first 3 years at Auburn. He's really kept them in a lot of games. But to me, it's not going to be about defense winning championships for Gus Malzahn. It's going to be about this offense getting back to where it was in 2013, averaging 40 points per game. That's what you need for Gus Malzahn teams to be able to compete for championships.
So here's what you were mentioning, Jim. You mentioned the difference between overall play and in conference. Against non-conference teams, you just look at the non-conference, Auburn averaged 44 points per game. So 44 points per game in their non-conference games, 22 fewer points per game in their conference games. That's an amazing drop.
Well, what do you think they average versus the three really good defenses, Alabama, Georgia, and Mississippi State?
13 points?
Yeah, a little over 13 points per game. That's just not going to win you football games.
But we would all say in the Gus Malzahn head coach era, don't consider what he did as a coordinator, but in the head coach era, 2013's the bar to beat, right? That's the best offense he's had. 39.5 points per game, and the in conference, 38.4. It dropped off by less than a point in conference.
More importantly, it was over 300 rush yards per game.
Yeah, they were dominant on the ground.
328 yards per game. And look, you had a special talent in Trey Mason, and you had a quarterback in Nick Marshall that could do a lot of different things. I don't foresee an offense like that, but you got to get more towards that 39 points per game. You saw what dominated the SEC last year. It really was Alabama's offense. And, Alabama had statistically still a really good defense, guys, but that was one of the worst defenses we've seen under Nick Saban, giving up over 18 points per game. But when your offense scores 46 points per game, you're not going to lose a lot of games.
And you score quickly, and that puts the defense back out there, something Auburn has dealt with in the past, too, and they had a really good offense. Melvin is next in Birmingham.
Hey, guys, how y'all doing this on a good Friday? Me as a fan, I really think that Gus is making the right decision, man, to go back to play calling because, that, like he said, that's what got him there. And if they are to, come at him or whatever, at least he's going out, doing it his way.
See, I would agree. I think if I'm an Auburn fan, I would look at this and say, this guy's obviously on shaky ground. I don't know if I want to say coaching for his job, but I guess he's coaching for his job. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, if he's 7-5, he's not going to be
coaching for his job. And it has been proven when he lets somebody else do it, it hasn't gone all that well, right? So if I'm an Auburn fan and I got a guy coaching for his job, I want him to be desperate and hungry. I guess this is the right move, right?
I will tell you, though, I went to grab lunch after I left the Winfrey yesterday. And while I was waiting on my lunch, a big Auburn fan, huge Auburn fan, was telling me how he really doesn't like Gus Malzahn.
Okay.
And this guy's a passionate, I go to the game Auburn fan.
I mean, that's not an uncommon feeling.
And he's ready for a change. Now, I don't think he will cheer against Auburn, but it was just sort of a weird dynamic, a weird place you find some really passionate Auburn fans that just don't like Gus Malzahn. I don't know. I don't understand that. I'm trying to think back if there was a time in Alabama history that I didn't like the coach.
I've compared it to this before. For me, Mike Martz with the St. Louis Rams, he had success.
I mean, he took you guys to a Super Bowl.
He did in 2001. They were in Super Bowl 36. They were a heavy 13-point favorite. They ultimately lost that game. So he had success early on.
But he was completely unlikable.
He was just an unlikable guy. And I'm not saying Gus is a completely unlikable guy, but I understand how some of the fan base gets frustrated. It's viewed as mediocrity when you're averaging 4.5 losses per season.
I play golf with a big Auburn fan yesterday. Daughter goes to school there. So, I mean, he's putting money in the program. He's been a lifelong Auburn fan. Goes down, tailgates go to the games. And the other guy, my threesome, was an Alabama fan. And asked him, do you like Gus Malzahn? And he said, you know, I mean, he's my coach. It was very tepid, but it was
very
like
indifferent.
Yeah, he's like, you know, I'm not going to hate a guy that's my coach. He's my coach. It wasn't like, oh, I love him.
You don't see that. I mean, you either see,
he's my coach. I'm going to support him. I want him to win. Yeah.
Or on the other side, I just don't like him. I'm ready for a change. I have not heard any Auburn fan say, this is the guy. This is the guy that's going to take us.
And that was kind of my point, Jim, is I think you get a lot of, I don't think you get a ton of, I hate him. I want him going. I'd rather Auburn go 3-8 to get rid of him. I think you get a lot of, look, he's my coach.
Speaking Alabama and Clemson by name from Jim Delaney of the Big Ten, yesterday in his State of the Conference address at their media days, doesn't like that the Big Ten champion has been left out 3 straight years. Ohio State has been left out as a 1-loss team. He points to strength of schedule, and he names Alabama and Clemson by name.
Clearly, Alabama and Clemson have separated themselves, and they have deserved everything that they've earned everything that they've earned in the last couple years. But I'm not sure that the strength of schedule or the conference championship has been adequately rewarded in my personal view.
It comes on a year where Alabama's schedule looks less than. Last was, you know, Louisville, which when it was made for TV, that game, it looked a little bit better than it ended up being. Florida State the year before ended up falling apart, but that was one of the greatest opening games ever scheduled. Jim Delaney obviously is going out as the Big Ten commissioner, so he can say whatever he wants now. And he's talking a lot about what Bowlesby was talking about, the Big 12. You need to play 10 Power 5 teams at least. We play 9 conference games. You guys in the ACC and the SEC play 8. Come on and play 9. But when I look at teams like Texas A&M, Auburn, and South Carolina this year, my goodness, their schedules, I don't care how many conference games you're playing, those are 3 schedules that I wouldn't want to play.
You know, I had this discussion with a couple of guys after our show yesterday. I don't know, and I haven't gone through and looked at Phil Still. I know he ranks the schedules by a degree of difficulty. I don't know 3 schedules that are more difficult than those 3 schedules that you mentioned. I mean, I'm talking about anywhere.
Yeah, we've talked some about BYU's. You know, theirs is tough.
Yeah.
Stanford has got a really difficult early schedule. USC's got a difficult early schedule. But a lot of that is early. These are spread out. I mean, these are tough games spread out through the whole schedule.
You're asking, you want the SEC to play 9 conference games? Okay, I want the SEC to play 9. That's another good game I'd be interested in. But if you're not named Alabama and you're playing 9, there's a better chance you're going to play Alabama and Georgia both. And that's how you get a schedule like Auburn has.
Yeah.
That's how you get a schedule like Texas A&M has. And you throw in a Clemson there.
Okay, just real quick. Phil Steele's 2019 toughest schedules. Look, and he does break down the numbers, and he has a lot of guys on staff now. So I think it's pretty credible what he says, at least going into the season. Would you guys give Phil that?
Yeah, I'll give Phil that.
Okay, out of the top 10, how many do you think are SEC?
South Carolina, Texas A&M, Auburn have to be there.
Oh, yeah. They've got to be 1, 2, 3.
So we're in the top 10 here?
Top 10.
I'd say 4.
I think it'll be half, 5.
6 of the top 10.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know how many Big Ten are in there?
How many?
0.
there would be one Big Ten. That would be Michigan at number 9. South Carolina, he's got number 1. He's got Auburn number 2. He's got USC number 3. He has Texas A&M number 4. So 3 of the top 4 and 6 of the top 10 in the SEC.
Yeah, Alabama and Clemson, they're so good. Some of these games, you know, I think Texas A&M will be a huge challenge. Auburn will be a huge challenge. LSU at home will be a huge challenge. When he says things like that, it looks really good in print. Yeah, you play 9 conference games. There's not a lot of Indianas in this league. I mean, even Vandy is a good football team.
Yeah, he lost. Look, I know they've had a Big Ten champion be left out, but it was a 2-loss Big Ten champion, and one of those losses was to Pittsburgh, and the other one was getting blasted by Michigan.
Yeah, one loss, Ohio State.
Wasn't a Big Ten champion.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, Ohio State got drilled by Purdue last year. You see what Auburn did to Purdue in the bowl game.
I know.
It seems like Jim Delaney has had a chip on his shoulder when it comes to the SEC for years. And the one thing I would say, even if the SEC played a 9-game conference schedule, you guys will give me there's still going to be a representative from the SEC at the end of the year. The SEC is still winning those championships.
This is a Roundtable Rewind.
The Bigger Pockets portfolio of podcasts are worthy of your investment.
We're having a real conversation as real estate investors.
New episodes available every day.
It's important to buy where it makes money and not necessarily where you want to travel to.
Bigger Pockets, On the Market, Rookie Real Estate, or Money Podcast.
The purpose of flipping is to create more cash so then you can reinvest into other types of properties.
The Bigger Pockets podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Jim Harbaugh, yesterday, it came out on a podcast with The Athletic called The TK Show. And it's a podcast, part of The Athletic family there. If you are a member, you can hear that or you can go chase it down and find it wherever you get your podcast. But in the middle of that podcast, there's a discussion about Urban Meyer, no longer the coach at Ohio State, but a guy who handled Jim Harbaugh on a daily basis, a yearly basis in the Big Ten. Here's Jim Harbaugh on Urban Meyer, and this made some headlines.
Urban Meyer's had a winning record, really phenomenal record everywhere he's been, but also controversy follows everywhere he's been.
So there's Jim Harbaugh saying that yesterday.
I just don't understand it. If you're Jim Harbaugh, what do you have to gain? I mean, Urban Meyer's no longer there. He embarrassed you. You went 0-4 against Urban Meyer. If you're asked about Urban Meyer, say that. Hey, look, he did a great job at Ohio State, but we're focused on Michigan, and you know we'll see what Ohio State does under Ryan Day, but all I can say is Urban Meyer did a great job when he was there. There's no reason to follow up. He had a phenomenal record, but controversy follows him everywhere. Why would you even say that?
No, but he's right. I mean, he is right. I don't think we can argue with what he said. I'm kind of with you, Lance. He's out of the conference. He's out of your way now.
Hey, how about say it when he's in conference?
Yeah.
I mean, then you got stones on you. Now that he's gone, I mean, what are you saying, really?
And he's asked about his record after that on the podcast, 0-4. And he says, all you can do is be judged on your record, what your record is overall and what your record is in your conference and what your record is in head-to-head matchups with other teams that you play. I think you'll find that right now Ohio State's the only team that has a better record than us. And has a better conference record than us, and has a better overall head-to-head matchup.
I don't doubt that Jim Harbaugh's wrong about that, but if I'm a Michigan fan, it doesn't give me much satisfaction because that happens to be my biggest rival. We can't beat him.
Well, yeah, and you paid him a ton of money to come in and save the program and to win championships, and the fact is they haven't won a Big Ten championship since 2004.
All right, Michigan is under Harbaugh, 10-3, 10-3, 8-5, 10-3. 38-14, 26-9 in conference. They haven't beaten Ohio State. They can't beat Michigan State either. There are 129 other college football coaches. So there are 129 other than Harbaugh. How many of those 129 could have had that same exact result at Michigan?
Like, I mean, I'd go 20.
Oh, I was going to go bigger than that. I was going to say 50.
I think Michigan might be a little bit more difficult than we think just based on what transpired before Harbaugh.
And you got to recruit, Brown. I mean, Jim Harbaugh recruits.
Well, a lot of guys can recruit.
Yeah, but a lot of guys can't.
I think they are serious about their academics there.
Well, I mean, Les Miles has a top 30 class at Kansas right now. Give Les Miles that Michigan job, he could recruit, and he's a Michigan guy.
Yeah, Les Miles.
He'd have about the same record, I think.
Can recruit. I would put Les Miles into the category of the 20 or 30.
Mac Brown, he's recruiting in North Carolina.
Yeah, I'd put Mac Brown in that. I mean, you're talking
about the same record.
Talking about two national championship winning coaches.
Yeah. I am, yeah.
Yeah, again, I think those jobs were better where Mack Brown and Les Miles were. I think LSU's easier to win than Michigan. I think Texas is easier to win than Michigan.
I agree.
And I can't believe I'm backing up Jim Harbaugh again. I can't stand the guy.
So you think it's only 20? You think there's only 20 other coaches in college football that could have done the same thing at Michigan?
Well, how about this? I don't think
20 to 30.
I don't think there's 20 coaches that are better than Jim Harbaugh. I just don't.
I mean, I'm not saying that. Let me give you one. Matt Campbell at Iowa State.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I like Matt Campbell.
I got a lot of confidence.
Okay, but Dan Mullen is a guy who right now is struggling to recruit to what Florida should be able to recruit to.
I think he could have done this at Michigan.
Dan Mullen is probably a better X's and O coach than Jim Harbaugh. Can he recruit? Jim Harbaugh can recruit. Now, can he win as a X's and O's coach? He's done it in other places. But Dan Mullen is struggling to recruit at a Florida level right now.
Now, does it flip around quickly for Jim Harbaugh if he beats Ohio State this year and goes to a 14 playoff? Because I think he's going to. I think he's going to do both.
Yeah, I've got him in the playoffs this year.
See, I'm so conflicted on Harbaugh because when you sit here and say these coaches, Jim, are better X's and O's coaches, I point out to you that he won back-to-back 11-win seasons at San Diego. He took Stanford out of the absolute gutter. I mean, that program was awful when he got there and took them to a 12-win program.
Well, I'm not
And it's taken Colin Kaepernick to the Super Bowl. I mean, I'm not saying...
A guy that can't even get a job.
I know.
I'm not saying that those guys are better X's than O coaches, but you're making it sound like anybody could go there and do what he's done.
I think a lot of people could.
So, Brown, what you're saying, I mean, 3 of the 4 seasons, 10-win seasons. I think almost all of the elite programs... A lot of coaches can get to 10 wins. We've seen it at Alabama.
That's kind of my point. Yeah, I think
But I don't know if you could do it 3 or 4 years.
No, Mike DeBose won 10 games at Alabama. DeBose can win 10 games at Alabama. Anybody can.
I think in the 4 years, a lot of coaches would have won 10 games at least once.
Yeah.
But to do it 3 or 4 years, 2 of the 4 years, he's been within a game of going to a 14 playoff. If they don't lose to Iowa 3 years ago, they're going to a 14 playoff. If they don't lose to Ohio State, they're going to a 14 playoff.
I feel like I've paid a lot of money for Jim Harbaugh, who is not a bad football coach, but is only doing if you guys say 2020 is fine, I just don't feel like I've gotten the elite that I've paid
for. No, he's underachieved. There is no doubt.
You throw 50 out, Brown. Give me the bottom end of your 50 that you think could do.
I went 7 at the bottom of the Power 5. I just went Power 5 here, okay? So I got 7.
I want to confirm with you that you're talking about you believe they could win 10 games in 3 or 4 years at Michigan.
10, 10, 8, and 10, which is what Harbaugh has done.
10, 10, 8, and 10.
Yeah. Dave Doran, NC State.
I disagree with you there.
Okay, he's won 9 games back-to-back years at NC State, so he can win 9 at NC State. He can win 10 at Michigan.
The ACC is much easier. I think Dave Doran's a good coach. I do. I think it would be close. I think he'd win more like 9 games.
Dave Clawson at Wake Forest.
I like Dave Clawson a lot.
I do, too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
I mean, he won 7 games when other teams had his playbook. Yeah, I can obviously coach.
I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, but you've got to, again, recruiting is the biggest part in college football. Is Dave Doran and Dave Clawson getting the type of athlete to Michigan that Michigan is getting?
I don't know. They're recruiting at Wake Forest and NC State. It's hard for me to know that. David Cutcliffe at Duke.
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, my God. He had Ole Miss in a game to go to Atlanta, and you don't think he can win 10 games at Michigan? Are you serious?
You're saying not 10 games. You're saying 10, 10, 8, and 10.
I am at Michigan. He had Ole Miss playing Eli Manning, too. Oh, so he can recruit.
Won multiple Super Bowls.
He can obviously recruit then. Matt Rhule at Baylor?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, right. I like Matt Rhule a lot. I think he's a top 25 coach.
PJ Fleck at Minnesota?
I don't know.
No.
Okay. Won 12 games at Western Michigan. You can't win 10 at Michigan, all right? Justin Wilcox at Cal?
I don't know. Still small sample size.
It is a very small sample size.
I'd say no.
And Barry Odom at Missouri. I've turned on this guy.
Yeah, I would say no.
Okay.
How about Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech?
I would say no.
Again, a small sample size. I don't know. I want to see him. I've not seen him. I was trying to stick to guys I've seen on the Power 5 level. I haven't seen him on the Power 5 level yet. So give me some time to see him at Georgia Tech. I love Jeff, but.
And again, I don't think that's a high bar, but where he took Michigan over and how close they've been 2 of his 4 years, I think he's done a pretty good job. He hasn't done the job he needs to be doing. And if he doesn't get it done this year, I mean, there's no excuses.
Will Muschamp, South Carolina.
I thought about him. I was on the border with him. He won 10 games once at Florida, and the rest of that Florida record tells me he couldn't do it at Michigan. If you can't do it at Florida, you're going to do it at Michigan?
Lance?
No.
Yeah. So that's what I thought.
Florida's a better job.
Yeah, Florida's a much better job. He couldn't do it at Florida. Why do I think he could do it?
It was
Michigan?
A week east.
Yeah.
Interesting. 4 Downs time brought to you by Vulcan Tires.
First down.
Everybody says money, so let's take money out of it. What is something odd you often think about before falling asleep?
It's the Rams. I really do, and especially in season.
Yeah.
I think scheduling and I think where they are, okay, they're 2-1 right now. The next four, where they're going
to
be.
In July, you're going to sleep thinking about the Rams?
No, I've been thinking about camp and a lot of different things right now. I've been thinking about the Rams a lot lately.
Before our schedule changed, occasionally I'd lay down and have difficulty going to sleep. That is not the problem anymore. But when that was the case, I would play random golf courses in my head. Like, I'd pick a golf course, and I'd just start playing it off the first tee and envision myself hitting the shots, and I'd go to sleep easy after.
What's the farthest hole you've gone to?
Yeah, it seems like I never get past the second.
Who do you play with?
I'm by myself a lot of times.
There's a thousand of me.
Yeah. I'm by myself. I just play solo.
I'm on top of the leaderboard, and I'm at the cut line.
And I'm calling the game.
Yeah. This is not going to shock you. I think about death a lot. Just the end of running out of time.
Very relaxing.
Do you think about dying in your sleep?
No. I think about just...
He probably thinks about a guillotine.
How long would it take the family to find you if you died in your sleep?
I'm just saying, you think about, okay, you finished a day. That's another day. And I saw someone the other day, a comedian. He was on Parks and Rec. I can't remember his name. But he made a great point. For a lot of people, think about it. How many times a year do you see your parents? Like, really see your parents? Spend the day with them. Brown, you're different than most, but some people in the audience said 2-3 times a year that you really spend time with your parents. And said, say your parents are going to live 20 more years. You're only going to spend 60 more times with your parents.
I think about that a lot with friends. Like, if I haven't seen somebody in a couple of months, when I see them, I think about how many more times I'll hang out with them. I think about finality of a lot of things. You brought it up yesterday when we were at SEC Media Days at the Winfrey. I started to think back. That's 17 different SEC Media Days that I've done there. I've spent probably just in that hotel a week of my life.
Yeah, that's true. I thought of that, yeah.
And I'll probably never go back there again.
But, I was in San Francisco, and I wonder, will I ever go to San Francisco again for the national championship for the Clemson beatdown? Will I ever go to Chicago again? I was in Chicago back in May. You never know. And my daughter's getting ready to go off to college. So oftentimes at sleep right now, I think about, well, if we become those 2 or 3 times a year people, I'm going to have 60 more times to spend, with my daughter.
I think you can think about it in a positive way, too, because I was listening on the way to SEC Media Days yesterday. I was listening to PGA Radio, and they were interviewing a couple that was in from Australia. It was right there in Ireland, and they were talking about it's a once-in-a-lifetime vacation. We'll never be back here. Well, you probably won't. If I ever go to Ireland, it probably will be my only time, but you can also enjoy the fact that, hey, I've really got to put a lot into this time because it's the last time I'm ever going to be here. And look, those special people, enjoy the moment you got with them because you're right. You might not see them again.
Go make the day good.
Second down.
What is the number one rule at your house?
I like my house to be clean, but I'm going to control the TV.
Mine is keep that AC on. We do not turn the air conditioner off. Keep that baby cold.
I don't make rules at our house.
That's right.
But the number one rule at our
house. I abide by them.
The number one rule at our house, because I hear it being broken all the time, because my sports room is downstairs.
Uh-huh.
And then we got 3 floors. So the middle floor is where life happens, and then the kids sleep upstairs. So downstairs is where I am usually, so I'll hear from the middle floor often. The dishwasher is right by the sink. Who put this glass or who put this plate in the sink? Just put it in the dishwasher. Yep.
It drives me crazy.
Me too.
So that is the number one rule in our house.
Yeah, right? I agree with that, and I've got somebody that continues to put dishes in the sink, and I don't get it.
It makes no sense.
The other thing is girlfriend likes to cook fish, and that is a no-no. You will never cook fish in my house, ever. Ever.
Third down.
If you could ride any animal into war, what would you choose?
Peregrine falcon. Now, they're small.
Yeah, it could be hurt. I guess you're going to have to expand it.
Well, it's the fastest animal in the world. Yeah. They're small, and first of all, you got air superiority, and I am moving so fast, nobody's going to be able to shoot me, so I'm on the Peregrine Falcon.
Can I go with something that doesn't exist?
Well, wait, how can he
Khaleesi's
fit?
Khaleesi's draggy.
How dragon fit on
that
it?
That would be good.
Jim, we're talking about riding an animal into war, and your objection is I can't fit on it?
Yeah, but you got to be able to actually ride the animal.
A Peregrine Falcon. That's what I'm going to write.
I think the obvious answer here is the elephant because it is such a dominant force, and you would have a good aerial view. You'd be up above everything.
I'm going to drop my bombs from my
falcon.
But
if I can go creature that doesn't exist, I might go Velociraptor.
I was riding the...
You get a good saddle on that thing.
I thought riding the rhino in would be a good look. The trained rhino.
I'm not going for look. I'm going for efficiency.
Look. Nobody's worried about look.
Kill him. No, man, he looks cool. He's on a rhino. Boys.
You know, it is amazing. They can train an elephant. I've never heard of a trained rhino. Yeah. Can you train a rhino?
They're very stubborn.
I've never seen it, but I'm riding it into war. If Brown can fit on a freaking falcon, a bird.
Well, be moving, too.
Fourth down.
Describe your personal hell.
So, for me, it's going to sleep.
My God.
That's what it sounds like, yes.
The other day, you know, I'm fascinated with sharks, and I was watching the National Geographic you talked about when sharks attack, and they were in the Seychelles. There was two shark attacks within a week a couple of years ago, and that's a place where you never have them. And I just started to think about most populated areas, Brown, because we had that discussion. Yeah. One of the reasons that Florida is such a big shark attack place. So I started to think, well, China's got these beaches because I made the mistake of watching The Meg. I wasted 90 minutes of my time.
No, you were in the pool watching.
Yeah, I was in the pool watching it, but 90 minutes of my time, and it took place off the coast of China. So I started to think, well, if it's that populated, there's got to be a lot of shark attacks. So I started to Google crowded China beaches. My gosh, guys, you got to do it. You'll never see as many people in one area. Like, I don't know how you move. So my idea held to be stuck on one of these Chinese beaches with that many people without a cooler.
Mine would be... I am in...
Google it, though. Seriously.
I am in a small, silent restaurant where the main dish is something crunchy. I hate hearing people eat. I hate being able to hear people eat. It makes my skin crawl.
I thought you were going to go a place with no meat.
Being around loud eaters. And if you were in a place where everybody is crunching, I'd have to walk out. Couldn't do it.
My personal hell is being employed by the Big Ten Network and being at Big Ten Media Days. That would be miserable.
Where are they this year?
Oh, it's in Chicago. It's just I hate Big Ten. I love Big Ten basketball.
Yeah.
I hate Big Ten football.
That's a Chinese beach?
That's Chinese beach.
Good gosh.
Look at that. Now, you say what you want about Memorial Day and July 4th around here, but, I mean, you can't even move in some of these situations. Look at this one with the inner tubes.
I mean, chances are that water smells like urine.
Oh.
Chances are that water is urine.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's exactly what it is.
That is trash on the table. Excuse me, no. That is four downs brought to you by Vulcan Tire. And listen, Baker says, G's done away opening up my Friday depressed with this 60 more times
that's
talk.
That's pretty sad.
Lee says, thanks for the instant depression. My daughter is 18 as well, done away. Listen, I'm not telling you to be depressed. I'm telling you this to, as Marty says in his book, never settle. If you've got 60 more times, make it the best 60 times.
Well, again, you gotta live in the moment, right? And I don't think we do a good job of that, Dunaway.
I'm just telling you, maybe it hasn't dawned on you. You've only got 60 or 70 or 100 or maybe just one more time. Make that time great. Get off your damn phone and go have fun.
Woo! This is a Roundtable Rewind.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
This is a Roundtable Rewind with LT, Dunaway, and Brown.
How old does Jim Delaney sound right here? Rockstar, give me cut four. And I'm not sure he's wrong about this, but I can't imagine living in a world where this is true anymore. Jim Delaney, Big Ten Media Days, on mistakes that were made in college athletics, in his opinion.
I think we made some real serious mistakes in the 70s that have come to create problems for us. I think one was the loss of the four-year scholarship. One was the loss of the $15 a month laundry. And the other one was the loss of freshman ineligibility. I think that's really expedited everything and hasn't allowed for the full socialization, cultural, and academic for students.
Okay, one reason it would be a living hell for me to be at Big Ten Media Days, they use words I don't understand. Like at the end there, I mean, the social thing, I understand freshman eligibility. if you don't play for a year, you're more of a normal college student. But can you imagine living in a world where you got $15 for your laundry and you couldn't play as a freshman?
I mean, no, that is backwards. You're right.
I mean, think about the
freshman today would say, you know what? I'm going to skip the college experience altogether. I'm going to challenge this NFL ruling. I'm not going to play college football at all. And most of these guys that are five stars, it's probably in their deal. I'm not doing my laundry.
Kareem, Archie Manning, all those greats from back in the day had to sit out their freshman year, play freshman games.
That is insane.
Different world.
Why they were doing that, I don't know. But it was the Marshall plane crash that changed all that too, because the freshmen weren't on the plane because they were ineligible. So they had to give a waiver to Marshall to play freshmen. Because
the next year they were able to recruit freshmen and play
them right away, and they were the only school that was able to do it. And I guess the rest of the NCAA was like, well, this is kind of a dumb rule anyway. Why do we have this rule?
They started allowing freshmen to play, and he says that was one of the biggest mistakes of all time. And more from SEC Media Days yesterday, where we still haven't gotten the projections yet from the media, right? But I told you mine, where Alabama and Georgia will be everyone's projection to be back in Atlanta. Gus Malzahn talking about the quarterback decision. Now, he said that he'd have a starting quarterback announced before the Oregon game. But he says, don't believe one quarterback's a runner and one is not. Gatewood's believed to be the better runner. But here's Gus Malzahn about Gatewood and Bo Nix as runners.
I don't think there's as much differences as everybody would think. But one thing I can tell you is both those guys will be true run threats from the quarterback position. They both can extend plays when things break down, and they both have outstanding arms. So, you know, one thing I will tell you that will be different is our quarterback will be a run threat. And I feel like, well, I don't feel like, I know when the quarterback is a run threat, it changes everything from a defensive standpoint, and it's really a lot easier to call plays too.
I mean, his offense is always better when he's got a good running quarterback. Stidham was a misfit in that offense.
You know, it's strange because when I saw Stidham briefly in those five or six starts at Baylor, he looked like an athletic guy that actually could do a little bit with his legs.
No, one of his best highlights was running and diving into the end zone for a touchdown at Baylor.
It's against high school defenses. I get it, but I've seen Bo Nix play a couple times. That kid can run.
Absolutely.
He can move. Pat Nix was pretty mobile, wasn't he? I mean, Pat Nix was a mobile quarterback, his dad, so I don't think it's a surprise.
I don't remember that.
He's mobile, yeah.
Yeah, he's mobile. I don't remember him being a great runner.
I mean, you didn't get asked to run a lot back then. That wasn't a run off. Now, granted, they would bring in Damian Craig in his place. Damian Craig was a much better running quarterback. Just saying, Pat Nix wasn't locked in the pocket.
Yeah, balance up tempo that limits the defensive adjustments. That's the way some scouts describe Gus Malzahn's offense when it's clicking.
Yeah, I think people that just assume that Gatewood is the better runner are getting caught up in the same stereotypes when people assumed Andrew Zhao was the better runner over Tyler Watts.
Right.
When it was the exact opposite.
Well, you've seen Gatewood run in the Purdue game, and he looks so great doing that. And as you said, you have to go back to a high school highlight reel on the blitz or something to see Bo Nix making a nice run. So
he can run fine.
Both can run well. Yeah. Brandon Marcello says Gatewood has a slight lead going into Auburn camp that opens up on August the 2nd. Mark Stoops getting an opportunity to tell everyone that the disrespect card is not something he plays often, even though you hear a lot of disrespect conversation coming from the Kentucky program. Here's the Big Blue head coach.
See that? I hear that. You know, so, again, was I worried about that the last 3 years? You know, did I accept what they told me we were going to be the last 3 years? It's no different now.
Well, I'll throw myself into the category. We're weird on who we like and who we don't like, just by personality sometimes. Where do you come down on Mark Stoops?
Yeah, I like him all right. I'm just kind of ambivalent towards him. I don't dislike him or like him.
Again, that's why I think he's good for the SEC and obviously good for Kentucky. So I don't wish ill will against Kentucky fans, but I'd like to see him have a bigger job to see what he could do with it. And then it would be easier to see whether I liked him or disliked him. In Kentucky, it's kind of hard to dislike one of those coaches.
I don't like Bob, and I'm wondering if that affects my like of Mark and Mike because I dislike Bob.
Wow. You dislike Bob Stoops?
Yeah, I've never been a big Bob Stoops fan.
I've been kind of indifferent to all the Stoops. Yeah. I kind of like Mike the most, but I've been indifferent.
In all of college football, how many jobs in the SEC right now in this moment in history of time is a top 10 job. Like if every job in college football was made vacant tomorrow and they said, hey, we've got to start over, the 10 best coaches would go after the 10 best jobs. Where are the 10 best jobs in college football?
I think you could make an argument for five in the SEC. You can make an argument. I don't know if five actually reside in the SEC.
It's hard to believe the SEC is going to have half of these in the country, but I'm with you. Here are the ones, Lance: Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Texas A&M, LSU.
Those five are in.
Well, I mean, but try eliminating one of them. Who would you eliminate?
Okay, so let's just keep those five and let's just go to the Big Ten. Ohio State is definitely a top 10.
Ohio State and Michigan. You got to throw Michigan.
I think I would.
I think I would too, but you know, I'm not so sure I would hold on them right now. Is Clemson right now 100% a top 10?
Yes.
Okay, so that's eight.
You
got to throw Ohio State, Michigan, USC, and Oklahoma in.
No Texas?
Texas has got to be a top 10.
And you got to throw Texas in.
Well, there
you
go. Where are we now?
And we're 10.
Well, then you're.
And you don't have Clemson in there?
And no, Clemson is one of them.
Well,
not with Jim's.
Yeah. I mean, Clemson is there in the discussion. I mean, with SEC, you got Ohio State, Michigan, Texas, USC, Oklahoma, Clemson.
Somebody's got to go. Who are you kicking out?
Texas A&M.
No, there's no way.
Well, I mean, they've historically done nothing, but I don't know.
No, I would kick just US. Do this historically. I hate to do it.
You can't kick. You cannot
being a Trojan
kick,
fan, I would kick USC.
You cannot kick USC.
Where they are right now,
you can't. It's a top 10 job.
All right, just real quick, Jim. You be Urban Meyer. Clemson and USC comes open. You can have either one. Which one are you taking?
Clemson or USC?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm taking USC.
Yeah, I would take USC for a couple of factors. Here's why, though, Brown. Look, I think Clemson's a better job right now. But you don't want to follow what Dabo's doing. And USC traditionally is going to mean more in the history of your legacy than Clemson.
You got to put aside, I don't want to follow Dabo, because that doesn't matter being a top 10 job. So forget that. You can't even consider that.
Just as easy to win at USC than Clemson. And you don't have to battle SEC schools for your recruits. Urban Meyer would own California. Would own it.
Texas and Clemson are open. You think everybody takes Texas over Clemson? Texas A&M and Clemson come open. Jimbo Fisher decides I'm going to go raise cattle.
Texas A&M's got a void. It's again, I'll give you the fan base, the resources, but there's something different about A&M because they haven't won.
The facilities.
They got all the money in the world. They should have all that. I haven't seen their facilities, but with all that money, if they don't have facilities, they're idiots.
No, they do.
They should. I haven't seen them, but they should be the best they can be.
I could tell
anybody that's been there and.
Yeah,
a lot of people will tell you it's the best stadium in college football.
What's perceived as an amazing recruiting base in the state of Texas.
The way I would sell myself if I'm a head coach, I'm going to do something nobody else has done.
Yeah.
But I still am a little weary. As far as us trying to put this thing together, the thing that bothers me about A&M is they haven't done what these other teams have done.
Okay. I would slide Texas A&M out and put Clemson. But Clemson would be 10 for me.
I mean,
A&M would be 11.
Clemson's got the best facilities in all of college football.
Yeah, and actually, I'm not taking USC out for A&M. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I'm not either. USC's in there.
What bothers you about Clemson? I mean, the best facilities in all of college football.
New money.
It doesn't bother me.
Terrible conference.
New money likes to spend. The conference hasn't hurt Clemson at all. No. They're in the playoffs every year.
Well, it's been a benefit for Dabo.
I know.
Yeah, we're not talking about top 10 teams.
We're talking about top 10 jobs.
Yeah, top 10 jobs.
And part of a top 10 job is what can I accomplish there?
But again, your job does reside in maybe the worst conference in college football.
Maybe so.
So I think that does hurt the job a little bit.
It's not as if the USC's is in a great conference.
No.
If you list all 11 teams and say take one of these out, that's not a top 10 job. I wonder who would be taken out.
Yeah. I think most would take A&M out or USC.
I think
take
A&M. If you eliminate the I don't want to follow Dabo because that really doesn't factor into whether it's a top 10 job or not. If you eliminate that, I think Clemson is in everybody's top 10.
But is it over Oklahoma?
Given the choice, would I take Oklahoma or Clemson? I think I'd take Clemson.
Our buddy Roser was sending this out, retweeting this is where I saw it. Since 27, the first major of 2017, they scored a par in majors, in just the majors, is pretty amazing. Brooks Koepka is in first place. Ricky Fowler's in second place.
Wow. Scored a par in the major. You know, Ricky Fowler's been close in a lot of majors. Close can never win them.
Close never wins.
Yeah. I'm convinced he'll never win one.
His time's running out. There's no doubt, Lance. I mean, Ricky kind of projects young, but he's getting older.
You know what he is? He's the American version of Lee Westwood, who you and I were discussing and breaking. Lee Westwood right now is currently in a third-place tie, 7-under in the Open.
That'd be a very popular win over there.
Ricky Fowler is 30-under par in the majors since since 2017.
Yeah.
Brooks Koepka is number one. What do you think he is under par?
55.
LT is higher.
61.
67 under par.
It's insane. We've never seen anything like it. I mean, Tiger is the only thing.
It's Tiger like,
that we've seen.
Yeah.
Jack
really
Nicklaus
is.
In the 70s. If you go look at Nicklaus's record in the 70s, it's remarkable in the majors, and then Tiger and then Brooks Koepka. I mean, that's all we've ever seen that's like this.
I'll leave you with this. Jim Harbaugh, Big Ten news. He is asked during his time at Big Ten Media Days this morning if Michigan will be playing a game on foreign soil. He says he probably shouldn't divulge who or where if we don't know yet, but that is an announcement that is imminent, he says.
Wow.
So Michigan is about to settle up and play on foreign soil against somebody, likely a big-name opponent. Surely they won't take Michigan and Notre Dame abroad.
I'd hope not.
This is a Roundtable Rewind.